Welcome to Out With Dan, the podcast that spotlights and examines the voices of LGBTQ+ authors, characters, and our allies. Together, we lift our voices and we tell our stories. I'm Dan White. Join me as I chat with this week's author. Hello, and welcome back to Out With Dan. Today, I'm excited to talk to Victor Lodato about Honey. Welcome, Victor.
Hey, Dan.
What a great read this was. I told you before recording, I sort of feel like it's a little bit of New Jersey noir or gothic. It's a great, great read. Can you give the audience a little bit of a setup for what the book is about?
Yeah. Honey is the main character, of course. And when the book starts, she's 82 years old. She grew up in New Jersey in a mob family and left quite young in her late teens to go to college and then really never came home. But then in her 80s, after living for 50 years in Los Angeles and losing a lot of her friends there, she comes back to New Jersey to try to make some peace with her family, to put some ghosts to bed. The sort of the fraught drama with her family kind of fuels the action of the book.
Well, I will say that I identified with Honey so much because I think Honey was my mom in a lot of ways. And so Honey has this internal dialogue that, and I will say this, and I don't mean this unkindly, but Honey's very judgy. She sees something, she's mesmerized by beauty. That's something I'm mesmerized by as well. Mm-hmm. So she sees something that's beautiful and she compliments it mentally. But when she sees something that's out of whack in her mind, she has a ongoing commentary about that. I just loved that. I think it can be a little tough. Do you find that that's something you're blessed or cursed with, or is that something you experienced a lot?
No, not me, but I mean, coming from, you know, writing as a playwright and then coming to novels, I like moral ambiguity and I like complicated characters. I mean, I like a character that is complicated and that maybe a reader might find some fault in them, but you have the whole book to get to love them. And so the book is a journey of coming to know Honey. And I hope by the end of it, you know, you're madly in with her. And even despite her complications. And so I think it just makes it real, more human. Who doesn't occasionally judge? Who doesn't have those faults? So Honey might be irritated. The book is also about, you know, some of the things that she's irritated by or the people she's irritated by ultimately become part of her chosen family. So there's this, you know, the judgment, she has to rethink it over the course of the book. So, and I like working that way because I don't want Honey to be, or any character, even my main character, to be a saint.
I think you did such a great job with it, Victor. I already loved Honey towards the beginning because I felt a familiarity with her. I felt like Honey was someone that I knew, having grown up with a mother very similar to that. And it's not something I find that I dislike. It's just part of how I was raised and the person I was raised by. And there's so much about family in this book, whether it's found family or, you know, birth family. One thing that Honey says is sometimes you have to leave home to find home. And I found that that was very true in my life. What about you? Was that something you had to do as well?
Yeah, when I'm writing a book, I'm not thinking about like how this is me, my story. I'm really focused on the character, but only later do I start to see the parallels. You know, I think if I thought about them at the beginning, it would trip me up. But, you know, Honey talks about how art changed her life that, I grew up in a working class family with a lot of tough guys around me and a lot of what we call now toxic masculinity. And, you know, a lot of bullies. And Honey deals with that too. And she escapes New Jersey and reinvents herself in the world of art. And I feel like as a person who was kind of shut down when I was young, as a child growing up, because a lot of the tough masculinity around me, that it was through art, through theater and writing that, you know, I found my voice. And I think it's the same for Honey. Honey blooms when she gets out of New Jersey and enters the world of, for her, it's fine art. She becomes you know, an important figure in the in fine art and painting in the auction world.
Well, and I will also say I think Honey's is quite a muse in this book in so many different ways. There are so many things that she says along the way that are that really sort of tugged at my heart. I mean, one of the things she talks about when her friend passes away towards the beginning of the book, and someone tells her a wonderful story about her friend, and she says that, you know, sometimes people become richer even after they die. And I think that that's very true in life.
Yeah. I mean, we've all obviously had loss, and there's something about, you know, I've experienced, especially with some of the women in my family and anyone really, friends, that, you know, you know them when they're living at the point they exist, then, you know, they're 80 years old and you know them, but then suddenly after they die, you remember every era of them. And suddenly they're so much richer because they're not just that one age, they're suddenly every age that you've ever known them. And it becomes kind of psychedelic and, you know, and just, you know, kaleidoscopic. And it just feels like, you know, they're suddenly everywhere and everything and every age. And so thank you. I'm glad that struck a chord for you.
It did. I mean, there were so many different things in this book. I made so many notes because one thing that I know is so true in life is secrets are inseparable from lies. I mean, we tell ourselves things that sometimes are true, you know. And another thing is, so nostalgia is a lying serpent. So when I first read that, I thought the serpent was telling a lie. And then I realized later on in Honey's mind, the serpent is lying in wait for you. And I do think that about nostalgia. I mean, it's so we are able to take in our mind something that happened in the past and make it so grand and so perfect and put it up on a high hill that we must return to. But can we ever return to it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think it's this big grand scheme of things. I mean, your book made me think of so many deep things, and I loved that.
Well, you know, I think, Honey isn't inspired by any particular one single woman in my life, but I think, you know, in the situation I grew up with, I grew up in a household with both my grandmothers, you know, living with me, lots of great aunts. And so, I guess in some ways, like a memory of the strong women in my Italian American working class family fueled it. So the book came out of some nostalgia, I think. But I think also, you know, Honey, in coming back to New Jersey, finds that, you know, that anything she glorified about the past has been a lie. You know, and that time or distance hasn't healed a lot of things, and that she has to change. She has to change really who her family is, because it's a lot about, you know, a family you're born into and chosen family. And you know, she has her consciousness has to evolve, and also she has probably some even nostalgia about who she used to be. And then when she comes back, she realizes, you know, she has a real consciousness shift about some of the darker parts of her own soul and how she's implicated in some of the crimes of the past that, you know, she has been most of her life blaming others for.
Well, and I also think that what I saw some in Honey is there were times where she remembered the past and she remembered it correctly. But what I think softens her towards the end is the fact that she begins to realize that some of the things that she thought were so horrible maybe weren't quite as bad as she thought they were. And I know there is a rape in Honey's childhood. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't really think that Honey quite sees how that might have shaped her whole world. I'm not sure that she came to that whole realization. I saw it as a reader that I was like, well, of course you made some of these decisions in life because these things happened to you growing up. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful thing. There's no point in Honey do we get coshed over the head with religiosity, or you must remember this, or you must go this way. It was simply an unfolding of a woman's life, and it was so beautifully done. It was so lyrical to me.
Thank you. Well, you it's interesting because people often, you know, I've heard this before, that it feels very organic, and that, you know, that it doesn't feel like it's hitting you over the head with themes. And that's because, you know, when I'm writing any book, and this has been true for all three of my books, you know, I'm really not coming to it. I want to write a novel about this subject, or, you know, or I want to get this point across. It really starts with voice, and Honey's voice was so strong in my head. And there were a lot of things, like, you know, readers will say with Honey and then my past books, like with a particular character, I had no idea that this was going to happen, or that's who they were, or that would be the turn. And my response has always been, and it's true, is that, well, I didn't either. You know, there's a trajectory say with Michael's character, Honey has a miss, she gets things wrong in the beginning, but so did I as a reader. So when we discover things later in the book, you know, that the reader is discovering, I discover those as a writer too. It isn't a manipulation of the reader. It's really, you know, you're witnessing sort of how my consciousness evolved in understanding the story. So I think that's one of the ways that, you know, if I can preserve that for a reader, it keeps you turning the pages, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I started this off by saying that I felt Honey was judgy, and I do, but I also think that as we see Honey grow, we see the tenderness in Honey as well, in places that I'm not sure that Honey would have seen living in California. But when she goes back to New Jersey, she's sort of presented with some things that she wasn't really prepared for. And yet such a beautiful tenderness comes from that. And I just love that.
Well, I'm glad you said to me, and I don't know if it was before we started the interview, but you said, you know, that there were things that made you cry. And I feel like maybe it's the playwright in me, but I feel like I haven't done my job unless people are laughing. And crying. I want both. You know, and I remember when I was a playwright at opening night, even if it was a very, you know, a tragic play or a dark play, all my plays had humor in them because I can't write dark stories without it. And I don't think in life, you know, if there is no sense of humor in art or sense of absurdity, it almost feels false to me. It almost feels like a literary pose. Like this is so intentionally dark because the writer wants it to be a very literary dark book. But anyway, my point is when I was a playwright and on opening night, you know, I would be, even in a very dark play, I would feel great relief if they were all laughing at the right places. Because the only way you can digest that other stuff, if you're enchanted by the book and delighted and even laugh, because, you know, the best kind of tears come out of when you've been laughing. It's just a different, there's something sublime about that kind of crying.
Absolutely.
Where the imagination of life is just mixing up, and that's what I'm always trying to achieve.
When you use a word in the book that I'm probably going to mangle, chiaroscuro?
Chiaroscuro, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which I think which its meaning is both light and dark at the same time. Which I think is a balance you certainly struck in this. There, and I'm going to mention a couple of things that I found funny. To the listeners, they won't understand why it's funny unless they read the book. But
it's good to let them know that it's funny.
Yes, it is. Well, it is funny because Honey introduces herself to Josh, and when Josh asks her name, she says Gina Lola Brigida. And of course, I just burst out laughing because I knew who that was. But the best laugh for me came when Josh says to her in a later scene, guess who I heard from? And Honey says, Jimmy Hoffa. Well, of course, I had been crying just before that. And that sort of dispelled all of that because it was so funny. Jimmy Hoffa was just simply out of the blue. And of course, once again, Josh has no idea who Jimmy Hoffa is simply because of her age.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you said that because that's, you know, I said how tears to laughter, but I always feel like if, you know, I know this from a playwright too, that if there is extreme emotion, you know, you don't want to milk it. You want to move on. You want to break that because it's almost overwhelming. And there are certain ways in all art forms that if it's pushed too hard, it's not made into art. It's too difficult.
I think sometimes some people put it in just for the torture value. That I don't dig, because then I don't have any redemption with it. I want that both back and forth. I want the yin and the yang. So I'm excited to cry and to laugh at the same time.
I'm glad. You're my reader then.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one other thing, this is something I heard often growing up, and it's something that I can never highlight enough. Honey's nephew says, forgive him, he doesn't understand. And Honey's response was, children understand more than they're given credit for. And that mm-hmm. has been something I heard growing up. And I find it to be so incredibly eye-opening, because people will say, well, I don't understand, you know, why is it that, why does this child think they remember? And the answer is because children understand a lot more than they're ever given credit for.
Yeah. No, it's definitely true. I mean, and in terms of like, you know, my own childhood, you know, in many of my books, you know, in the two past books I've written, children have been central characters. In this book, I have an octogenarian, but there's still a lot about Hunt's youth. And people are always saying, wow, you must have such a great memory of your childhood, because all the details of this life and in New Jersey and of this childhood seems so vivid. And the fact is that I don't at all. Like, the events and exactly what happened and what people said or what things even looked like, I don't remember. But I do have a very, very strong memory from early on of how I felt. Like, yes. I can be in that house, and even though I can't see it or know exactly what happened, I know exactly what was in my gut, you know, both joy and fear. And so I think a lot of my writing has been trying to invent stories that emotion that I feel, that it can sort of, I can build these fictional architectures that I can put this emotion that I remember from my life into it. The stories are invented, but why they think they feel so real and vivid is because it's infused with very strong emotion from my own life.
I agree. And I think it does make sense, because I do think that I think children really do remember the emotions. And I think we adults do as well. You know, it's, you know, if someone slaps you across the face, you're going to remember that. If someone gives you a hug on a day that you really, really need a hug, you're going to remember that. It's the emotions we remember so much more vividly than the event. The event might have moved it along. And I will highlight a couple other little things. So there is a point where Honey runs into Teresa, and she has a bag of plums, and Teresa walks away from her, and Honey says it took basically all of her strength not to hurl a plum at Teresa. And I thought, oh Lord, I've been there before. Separates the humans from the animals, perhaps. Yeah. But also the scene where Angela is dying in the hospital and Honey visits her, I thought was one of the most beautiful scenes, in the fact that Honey got a chance to say some things and to let go of some past regret and anger and just let some things go. And I thought that was so wonderful. It's a bit of catharsis for Honey that I didn't see coming. And it was nice to see it when it showed up on the page.
Oh, I'm glad that scene worked for you. Because, you know, I knew that when this particular character, Richie Verona, comes up, that I wanted to tell the backstory on what happened. And I thought, I have no idea. I don't really want to do like a flashback scene. I didn't know how it was going to happen. But then when her friend Angela was sick and she went to her deathbed, I just knew that was the moment where it would happen. And it happened very organically. And it's a kind of an odd scene, because, like, you know, we learn it from, like, basically it's kind of it's a dialogue with a dying person. It's really a monologue. But when it came out in that situation, I felt really good about it, and it seemed counterintuitive, but it worked really well. So I'm glad that you said that. Cause I'm very fond and proud of that scene as well.
There's something about it too, I think, Victor, that, you know, in life, we often want to share our story or tell our side of a story. And in this situation, I'll let the audience know, Angela's in a coma. So there isn't a conversation. It is a monologue, as you say. But, you know, Honey got a chance to share something that she probably never would have been able to share with Angela had Angela not been in a coma, because there would have been a dialogue back and forth and Angela probably would have shut it down.
Right. So
yeah. I felt like Honey got a chance to bare her soul with complete honesty and to say, hey, look, you know, we were both involved in this perceived injury in the past. And, you know, here we are at the end of our lives. Why don't we let the shit go and move on with life?
Exactly.
So I do want to, is there a Dante's? Because I'm ready to make a reservation.
Well, that's so funny. You know, I had a memory of a place called Dante's from my childhood. It actually was in Jersey City. And I sort of remember it, probably a little not as fancy as the one in Honey. But I was telling my uncle, my mother's brother, my uncle Frank, actually he had read the book, an advanced reader's copy. And I was visiting him in New Jersey. And he said, I'll be right back, Victor. And he came with me and he had this really old ashtray from Casa Dante that he had stolen in the restaurant. It was all cracked. He had glued it together. So I own it now. So I have it home on a little shrine. So it is, I think it's probably no longer in existence, but that sort of, you know, that old world Italian sort of world in Honey, it still exists a little bit in New Jersey, but not like in my childhood. But anyway, to answer your question, Casa Dante's, I have the ashtray to prove that.
I love that.
And I love that my uncle stole it too.
he borrowed it.
His wife and said, put this in your purse.
Right. You know, he borrowed it. It was research. Come on now.
Yeah.
I love that. Victor, do you have a website or social media you would like to share?
I'm not big on social media, but I do have a website. It's my name, victorlodato.com. And my Instagram is given name Vittorio.
I love it.
Which is my given name. So I wish I had published under Vittorio, but I started with Victor and kept it, but I like Vittorio because that's my Italian name.
Well, I like it too, and I did love the fact that you named a character after yourself. I'm like, look at you being clever.
I have to make an appearance. So
I love it. Once again, the book is Honey, and it's by Victor Lodato. It is absolutely delicious. Go and get it and read it. Thank you so much, Victor, for joining me on Out with Dan.
Thank you, Dan. It's really lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Out with Dan. You can find more information about this podcast and its host at outwithdan.com, on Twitter at @outwithdan, and on Instagram and Facebook at @GoOutWithDan. This podcast is hosted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and the theme music is provided by bensound.com. Join us again soon for the next episode of Out with Dan.